This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Hi, it's John Williams, and we'll go all the way until 1 o'clock, and then it's the Anna DeVlantis Show, and we start on Mondays with Elise Glink from Think Glink Media. Visit thinkglink.com. She's the real estate and financial wellness expert, and there's a real interesting story I want to start with today. Elise, welcome to the show. How are you?
Nice to be here, John. Good, and thanks.
I pitched this one as a revelation. Actually, it's not at all. I think we knew that the markets through the pandemic that went up, 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 were really pushed by five stocks, if you will, the FANGs. But the exact number I saw was that 19 stocks drove half of the market's almost $8 trillion pandemic gain. So as happy as we are to say, yay, at least the markets were strong, really it was 18 stocks that made it strong, 19 stocks.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's and I can't name them all for you off the top of my head, but I mean, they also include stocks like Tesla. And if you were if you owned an S&P 500 index, you got the benefit of all of that. If you were smart enough 3 years ago to have bought Tesla, you're probably whistling, you know, some sort of happy song right now. But it is a very small number of companies driving stock market gains, and it really just talks to a great extent why you can't just look at the stock market and say, oh, well, that's up, so everything's fine.
So, yeah, the FANGs are Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, and I'm missing one. I think there's two A's in FANGs. Am I missing one?
Alphabet is the parent company of Google.
Google,
so
right.
It's Facebook,
Amazon.
Apple,
Amazon. Thank you, Steve. But I mean, so I wonder if that should give us pause, right? Like, we know that there's a lot of things that aren't great about the economy, but at least the markets have been strong. But really, it's just a handful of stocks. So doesn't that sound cautionary to you?
It does. It's sort of interesting. You know, we've watched, as another example of something that's caught fire, we've been watching Bitcoin, which surpassed like $55,000 a unit for Bitcoin last week, up from an incredible, I think last week it was somewhere, or last year, I mean, it was under 20,000. It's gone up tremendously. And today, Janet Yellen came out and said, hold on, we have some real concerns over this, you know, sort of thing, and concerns for the investors and the users. And what we see is that Bitcoin is mostly being used, you know, for illicit transactions. And I thought that was sort of a remarkable thing, because if you look at the price of Bitcoin, you think to yourself, well, this is a great investment. I should pile in. And actually, Elon Musk last week announced he was buying $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin, and he's going to start accepting transactions in it. So there's obviously some legit things going on, but I just thought that was an actually remarkable statement coming from Janet Yellen.
Well, she's a little late to that party. I mean, I think that was the very first thing we learned about Bitcoin, was it was a untraceable digital currency that was favored by drug dealers because cash wasn't involved and you could not trace it to an individual. They had control over everything about its footprint. That was one of the values of it. And you wondered if it would be legitimized over the years. The fact that I believe it is Miami is offering its employees compensation in Bitcoin, or that, like you said, Tesla is thinking about it. I don't think any of the big three or four are right now, though, right?
But no, not to my knowledge. But it's a very interesting development just in terms of how the larger market has favored and been pushed by certain companies and certain kinds of things, like this idea of a digital currency or, you know, cryptocurrencies, and what that means down the line to things like the dollar, and how the strength of the dollar plays into U.S. produced goods and services or things that we buy from other places. All of this has become so interlinked, this fintech story, that J.P. Morgan came out today and said the real story isn't Bitcoin, and it isn't really about what's going on here. It's the financial technology companies that underpin all of this that have taken over the last year a real leap forward in driving what we do with the economy and what we do with our money.
I need somebody to call in at 312-981-7200 or text in and tell me what I saw the other day. But we drove by a gas station, I think is where it was. There was a sign, and I think it was attached to a gas station, and it said Bitcoin ATM. Think about that.
That's incredible.
On Halsted, you know, I mean, just like going down the road, and there's a laundromat and a Dunkin' Donuts, and then there's a Bitcoin ATM, and I don't even know what that means. What do you, you don't get little gold coins out of it, and you don't put gold coins into it. I don't know what you do with that thing. So if anybody can tell me, A, if what did I see, and B, what does that do? I'd love to hear your wisdom on this. I know you have some things to say about unemployment and also, as always, some real estate news, including what is happening with mortgage rates. Elise Glink is on a line, and we'll pick it up here in just a minute. Elise Glink's on a phone line, and we're visiting with the financial wellness and real estate expert. Let's talk a little bit about mortgage rates up a little bit, but it's not like it was a game changer, right?
Yeah, it wasn't a game changer, except that we were at historic lows, and it did jump up a bit. And it, you know, the question is, what's really going to happen from here on out? Are we going to see inflation start? Are we going to see that the fiscal relief is going to really heat up the economy, like the Biden administration says? If that's the case, what we may see is mortgage interest rates stay low, but they'll be off of their all-time lows. Which is going to put a little bit of pressure on purchase prices. But it remains to be seen how affordability is going to be impacted. But when interest rates go up, people are less able to afford more expensive homes, and so demand may go down.
Or the prices go down then too, right? Because yeah. There'll just be fewer mm-hmm. people coming to your open house or whatever. I get the point on that. Are you following any individual stocks or a sector in the market that is of interest to you?
You know, I really don't believe in buying and selling individual stocks anymore. I moved personally a long, long time ago to index mutual funds, which I think are a great way to diversify, but also allow you sectors. So I do have an S&P 500 index fund, which has done very well, thank you. But I don't believe in sort of picking and choosing individual stocks. I did that for many, many years until a financial advisor pointed out that I had basically, with 60 different companies, built my own
mutual fund.
Yeah. And he said, and how are you doing with that? How are you managing all the information that you need to make sure those are still the right things? And I said, not so well. And he said, yeah, it might be time to get back to something a little simpler. But I do think that that's a very good strategy for a lot of people. For most of us, we have very busy lives and a lot to focus on. And whether we're reading the K's reports from all of these different companies and staying on top of every little thing, probably not.
Well, if you dollar cost average and if you have an index fund, you were a genius this year because markets went so low. Anything that was buying the S&P or the Dow or whatever, you bought low and you're high right now. That's been a very good equation.
It was. People did very, very well. But you also did well if you just stayed in what you had and you didn't sell at the low.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, and we saw this, people were taking money out of their 401ks at work, literally liquidating them, not because they had lost their job and needed the cash, but they were afraid they were never going to come back. And that's the cardinal one mistake. The thing that people do that they absolutely shouldn't do, it's like shooting yourself in the foot and then trying to run a marathon.
Oh, I like the second part of that. I haven't heard that version of it, but that's well put. Unemployment numbers are surprisingly high.
They are. I think that economists were really surprised to see that the first-time unemployment numbers came in almost 100,000 claims higher than economists had predicted. It was an increase from the week before. The week before's numbers were also revised higher. And overall, The Washington Post did a very interesting deeper dive a couple of days ago into how many people are actually unemployed. So the number that we've been seeing a lot is that there are 10 million jobs missing. 10 million people are unemployed. But the latest data says that actually 18.3 million people are receiving weekly unemployment payments. And so that has hovered very close to 20 million. So how do you have only 10 million people unemployed, but 20 million people receiving benefits every week, and that is a really confusing gap. And so what I think that people who are like, you know, Heidi Shierholz, who's the former chief economist at the Labor Department, you know, she's thinking that it's somewhere in between that number but closer to the higher end. And in any case, it's much higher than it should be or was a year ago.
I want to read you one thing from a CNBC. Royal Caribbean is up 10%. The cruise stock jumped more than 10% after Royal Caribbean said that future bookings are coming in at similar volumes and with higher average prices than pre-pandemic results. How about that?
I think that's great. They just probably can't wait till people, you know, get their shots and go out. And I think a lot of hospitality companies are thinking that there will be this rebound of people who want to travel because nobody's been able to go anywhere for a year. And I know people have traveled and they've gone certain places, but certainly nowhere near the level. I think a company that's, again, getting hit today also is Boeing. Wow, Boeing has just had two really huge hits in the gut, and they just got another one with that explosion of the engine over the weekend where parts were raining down on the city of Denver. And there was actually a video online of a piece of the engine that fell through somebody's roof. Thank God nobody got hurt. But that company, on the other hand, you know, which makes the planes that take us to places like, you know, Royal Caribbean, their company's not going to do so great today.
Yeah, I saw that, and I actually had that thought because we've got a trip plan, Brenda and I do, in the fall, and I thought it's a smaller boat. It'll be very safe, but we still got to fly there. And then I say, well, that'll be no problem. Then I look at the TV, and there's a picture. Somebody's shooting out of their window of the engine on fire. I thought, you know, 2020 is not over. It is still 2020. That is such a 2020 moment. I wanted to just pick up a quick phone line, Elise, because Jim called in. I'll let you punch him up, Pete. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN Radio. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good, John. Go Dogs.
Oh, this is a fellow Saluki then. Well, so I drove by something that I thought said Bitcoin ATM. Is that possible, Jim?
Yes, very possible. I actually have a broker who places those ATMs all over the Midwest.
What do people do with them?
You can, if you have an account, you can walk up and purchase Bitcoin.
So if
you have $100, you can put your card in and purchase $100 worth of Bitcoin, which today is minuscule, but...
Well, you wouldn't buy a whole Bitcoin, but you'd buy a share of a Bitcoin, which that exists. But I mean, so that's... And then you would get a receipt. So you're not getting anything. It's just a way to purchase Bitcoin on the street, in other words.
Correct. I mean, it's the same as my calling a broker, a Bitcoin broker, and buying Bitcoin I did in 2018.
A kiosk next to a donut shop? And then what about the other way? Say I do have an account with Bitcoin in it. I guess I could withdraw cash from that, from my Bitcoin account, and get dollars?
Through a broker.
Well, the transaction would take place through a broker, but this is all going to happen at this one machine, right?
Yes, it could.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And I'm so glad you called in to share that with us. And good for you for buying Bitcoin in 2018. Just remember the number two cardinal rule of investing, which is don't wait until you lose all of your gains to sell and reap your profits.
Yeah, no kidding. I would.
No, I actually bought two coins. I have 1.7 coins left, and it's worth 70 some thousand.
Right.
Started at 6,000.
Yeah. Wow.
Good for you.
All right. Thanks for the phone call, Jim.
Thank you, John.
Item Dogs. He and I went to Southern Illinois University, evidently, probably in different years.
There you go.
Well, any other wisdom then along those lines for us, Elise?
I think that one of the things that we've seen with GameStop and everything that's been going on with Robinhood is that it's easier than ever to buy all sorts of things and make day trading and investing. And there are a lot of people who have just, I guess, in their time out, have signed up for that platform because it's free to make trades. I just caution everybody, you know, one of the great pieces of advice that I got from my grandfather, who was a fabulous investor and did very, very well for himself over the years, is, you know, have a strategy and then stick to it. So his was, when the price doubles, sell half. So you still got some in the game, but you're actually banking some of your profits. That works, by the way, at Las Vegas at the craps table as well. Just always remember you want to put some money back, take it back, and make sure you're covering your investment so that you don't lose everything should the worst happen.
Always a pleasure, Elise. Thanks for joining us. The real estate and financial wellness expert actually has a book, too, 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. I gave it to my son when he bought his first home. I wish I'd had it when I bought mine. Visit thinkglink.com. Thanks, Elise.
You bet, John.
Although when we bought our first house, we paid $49,000 for it and had to save for a while to get to 10% to put down. Our interest rate was 13%, and we thought we were clever. Just looking at some of the things we're yet to talk about, one of them will be a follow-up on what happened in that Boeing plane. And also, there's a new chicken sandwich on the market coming your way, and this one also sounds pretty good. Let's talk a little bit about the business side, though, or the tech side on the Business Lunch. Catherine Davis is an associate editor at ChicagoInno.com. Talk to me about Foxtrot and what they're up to. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here. Foxtrot is a local startup that actually had some big news this morning. They raised $42 million to help grow the business. And so, you know, if you live in Chicago, you may recognize the name Foxtrot because you've seen their stores around the city. They have one in Lincoln Park. They have one in Old Town, River North, and they're expanding. They've raised this money to open up new stores. The whole idea with, you know, their physical footprint is that they're sort of reinventing the corner store or, you know, sort of the 7-Eleven. So they're serving you hot coffee. You can buy pre-made foods, snacks, alcohol, and even gifts, I think, is another one of their offerings. So it's interesting to watch them grow. They have some really interesting investors. I think in this round, the Sweet Green co-founder, Nicholas Jammet, was one of the investors included. The University of Chicago, here in Hyde Park, also invested. So cool to see some names like that backing a growing Chicago startup.
How are they different than the corner store, the 7-Eleven, or maybe some sort of, local store where people use it as a convenience stop? What's different about Foxtrot? Is it delivery?
Yeah, so a big part of their business is a one-hour delivery option. Some other players, like I think 7-Eleven also has a delivery option now, but Foxtrot sort of, pioneered the concept of the local corner store bringing it to you as opposed to you going to them. The other big selling point for Foxtrot is that it's just a really modern shopping experience. If you've ever been in a Foxtrot store, it's sort of like upscale, really trendy, and the brands that they sell, tend to be on the higher side, as far as brand recognition and price. People seem to really like it. I've been in a few of their stores, and it's always a good experience.
Yeah, I would imagine it is, but it's also like, oh, this all looks really good. But it's also really expensive. I need to get out of here now. You know what I mean? I think a lot of us have been in sections of stores that way or in stores that way. It's sort of like never go shopping at the grocery store when you're hungry. I think if you walk into one of those places, everything looks very appealing. But there's profit to be made there by them, right?
Right, absolutely. And the thing is that they had with their cafe concept, they're really inviting you to come in and sort of hang out as well, which, as we know, leads to more spending, right? Foxtrot is certainly kind of curating a business, around the delivery, but also around community, I think.
Bill Gates has got his hand in a lot of things. Talk to us about this latest Nature's Find venture of his.
Yeah, so Nature's Find is a Chicago company that is producing meatless and dairy-free foods. They have a production facility on the south side. They've been around since 2012, and last week they just announced their first foods that are actually hitting the market. So, they've been sort of working on the technology and their method for creating meatless foods. That are high in protein and healthy and everything. But just last week, actually are bringing these items to market. So the first two are dairy-free cream cheese and a meatless breakfast patty. They say that, you know, this is a limited release bundle, but it's also part of an expanding breakfast line that they'll be launching in the future. You know, what's really interesting about Nature's Finds that they're launching in, you know, sort of a market that already has a lot of big players. You know, so for example, there's Impossible Foods in California and Beyond Meat. They've raised a ton of money. One of them's gone public, you know, and they have deals with like Burger King and these other big chains. So it'll be interesting to see how Nature's Finds can compete, but they have backing from Bill Gates, which in this industry is never a bad thing. So we're excited to see them grow.
Have you tried their dairy-free cream cheese or their meatless breakfast patties?
No, I haven't tried any of them yet, actually.
Yeah, I haven't either. I kind of want to, and I kind of don't, but I think I should. I think I should give these a meatless chicken patty. That's a contradiction to me, but I'm open to the concept, so maybe that's my next phone call. 1871 is going to acquire Catapult. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so 1871 is, you know, many people around town know is Chicago's like biggest and sort of most well-known startup hub. So, you know, they are really working on helping startups grow in Chicago. And last week they acquired a local accelerator program called Catapult and are going to sort of, you know, weave its Catapult programming and events into 1871. And, you know, so this is just sort of a sign of some more tech consolidation that we've been seeing in Chicago. You know, last year, 1871 acquired the Illinois Technology Association. So I think some of this has to do with the COVID strain put on these sort of organizations and programs. But, you know, it's also not a terrible thing for 1871 to sort of strengthen what it's able to offer startups in Chicago.
Some time ago, we talked about Wayfair and that plant or that warehouse they were going to open up. Down by Joliet, or up by Joliet, if you're listening to us in Peoria. What's the status of that right now?
Yeah, so the construction on that is slated to begin this spring, and they plan to employ 250 full-time people there. And I think construction and will be over, and it'll officially open in mid-2022. So sort of excited to see that growth there. It'll be a 1.2 million square foot center.
This will be a fulfillment center, so this is where orders come and, I guess, get sent out. What is getting sent out?
Yes, yeah, so I believe it's like most of the furniture that they're selling. I'm not sure that there's a specific, you know, sort of category that they're focusing on there. I think it's, you know, most of what's on their website or what's for sale will be coming through this center.
Yeah, well, good for Joliet and good for all of us if it's in the Chicago area. Good to know. Okay, Catherine Davis, ChicagoWindow.com. Thanks for your time. We'll visit again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
She's an associate editor there. This is John Williams, and Steve Grzanich is in the WGN Radio Newsroom.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Canadian developer is planning a project that includes more than 1,000 apartments in the West Loop. Cranes reports the development would be the biggest in downtown Chicago in 30 years. Vancouver-based Pacific Reach Properties wants to build two towers of more than 40 stories each, just south of the Presidential Towers complex and east of the Kennedy Expressway. Bolingbrook-based ATI Physical Therapy is planning to go public. As part of the arrangement, ATI will merge with Fortress Value Acquisition. The current ATI CEO, CFO, and COO will remain leaders of the company. The company operates roughly 900 clinics in 25 states. It has about 5,000 employees, including about 300 at its headquarters. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The story you've probably heard and seen ad nauseum on TV is of that fire burning out the on the that engine fire on the right wing of that Boeing plane. I'm amazed that somebody, I don't know what they were saying, I haven't heard the audio of it, but I'm surprised that somebody would be sitting there looking out the window and maybe calmly, maybe not, with their phone making a video of the fire just outside. I think I would close the shade or ask if anybody wants a better view of the fire on the wing. I'll trade you right now. But there is that video, and it is everywhere. Okay, Amy, let's start with that story then. What are you hearing about that fire?
Yeah, so since that fire happened, airlines have halted dozens of older models. This is about really focusing around the engine. The engine was made by Pratt & Whitney. It showered debris, as people saw all over social media, over a Denver suburb. It also prompted regulators to order emergency inspections. What was perhaps lesser known, at least in the U.S., was at the same time that was happening, there was also an issue with the same type of engine on a 747 flying over Dutch airspace. So those two things have prompted a lot of moves that happened really quickly since that happened. We saw a Japanese airline, they had something similar happen on December 4th. So to them, this is kind of like there's a lot going on here. So their planes with this engine, the 777s, have been grounded. Korean Air, Asiatic Air followed right after that. And the UK said they have banned these jets from their airspace. So while this isn't really pointing to some broader issue with the 777, it is nonetheless kind of another thing on the to-do list with a lot of urgency for Boeing, which is, you know, something we're right. certainly watching, Boeing being headquartered here. But it's prompting all these moves very quickly, and a lot of different inspecting bodies, the FAA here and then the EU equivalent, are taking a look at this aircraft and this engine. What it's likely to do, what a lot of industry watchers are saying, is that it's likely to accelerate the retirement of some 777 aircraft that have this particular kind of Pratt & Whitney engine in it. So we're going to be hearing about that probably in the next couple of days. But here's a moment where, you know, Boeing is already dealing with, and United, of course, dealing with the air industry and what's happened to it due to the pandemic. Boeing just got cleared after that 737 MAX being grounded, and they've halted deliveries of the 787 Dreamliners because of manufacturing flaws. So like I said, another, you know, urgent item on Boeing's to-do list here to deal with the 777s and this particular engine.
Were all those engines Pratt and Whitney engines then?
They are. They're not all the same model. So there's the PW4000. That was what happened. That's the video that people saw on social media. There's the PW. There's another one in that 4000 series that's not identical to it. It's a little bit different. And that was in the one that happened in the Netherlands. So they're all kind of in the same family of engine. So I'm sure the Pratt & Whitney folks are looking into this and working with regulators as well, as is Boeing.
My understanding was, though, that it was there's nothing good about any of this, but at least it was not that many airplanes flying in the United States. It was just a couple of dozen that had to be taken out of service.
United's taken 24 out of service. That's right. So we're not talking hundreds. We're talking, 24 is a lot more manageable number out of about 170-ish planes, right? It's a little over that. So again, not a huge number. It's not all of them. If you're flying anytime soon and you see you're on a Boeing 777, that's not necessarily cause for panic because they are looking at, okay, when was this engine put in? How old is this aircraft?
Yeah.
What engine is it? And then they're grounding accordingly. So I'm going to be watching the Asian airlines as well as here United and other carriers and to see what happens over UK airspace. I mean, we saw this response happen just so quickly. The story changed. I mean, every hour this morning, it seems like it was updating with another country weighing in. So I suspect we will hear more over the coming hours about this, but I will be very interested to see what that inspection reveals. I know the EU regulators, Japanese regulators, and American regulators are in conversation. They're talking closely about all of this, and it'll be interesting to see where they land.
Speaking of the UK, their Supreme Court had a ruling on Uber drivers. I wonder if that'll resonate here, and what did they say?
I have that same question. So Uber drivers have been ruled workers, employees, not contractors, by the UK Supreme Court. I think I've said to you several times that it's always interesting to see how tech companies are treated a little bit differently in European courts, particularly in Ireland. Irish courts have really done a lot of stuff around privacy that U.S. courts are just now kind of stepping into. And as we know here, I think you and I have talked about a couple of times, Uber drivers, that's been a big question here. Are they employees? Are they entitled to benefits? Or are they contractors? I mean, the gig economy is kind of built on the idea that anybody can kind of power up this app and get to work as needed. So the UK Supreme Court has said that they are workers, but what they based it on was very interesting. And that was about due to the dependence on Uber, since it's fairly regulated how you, the driver, and me, the passenger, or whatever, how we interact, it's all through Uber. It was that messaging and that communication tool that really kind of swayed this UK court. I think a lot of U.S. courts, particularly in California, we saw this kind of play out. I think a lot of U.S. Stakeholders in this are probably watching with a lot of interest. I'm sure the folks at Uber, of course, are trying to consider how that's going to go. They gave a statement that said they're, of course, going to cooperate with that ruling, but they're going to continue to make some changes. Who knows what those changes will be exactly, but some of them will be about how drivers control their earnings and their protections in terms of having access to insurance and things like that.
30 seconds left. What do you know about the Taco Bell chicken thing?
Well, it's a chicken sandwich and it looks like a taco. So it's like a flatbread wrapped around a chicken, because Taco Bell has also gotten into the chicken war. I thought we left this back in the summer. we did not. Indeed, there is a chicken sandwich that looks an awful lot like a taco from Taco Bell.
This feels like a return to normal to me. Let's all get bent out of shape about not the pandemic, but about who has a better chicken sandwich. I can do that.
That's exactly. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. But the chicken sandwich war is back on, so I guess we can do that now.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.